Hey, everybody, it's me, Sam Stein, managing editor at The Bulwark, joined by Tim Miller. Look at him in what appears to be a hotel. Nice shirt. Getting ready to interview Kamala Harris.
Yeah, this is how you get ready to interview Kamala. You know, you just get into your cozy t-shirt. You start to think about it. You start to think about everything, you know, everything that came before. You start to marinate how you didn't just fall out of a coconut tree. You know, you get the product.
Yeah, are you not eating coconuts to like prep for this?
I am. So I'm thinking about all that. Just kind of getting in the right headspace. I'm also thinking about redistricting.
Yes. Oh, wow. What a segue. What an amazing turn. Yeah, we're going to talk about redistricting here. Two big stories that just popped today. It's like midday, November, Tuesday, the 18th. The first I want to talk about is Texas, because Texas was like the big get for Republicans. They made a big show. It started this whole process. They're going to redistrict. They're going to get 5 seats for Republicans. Anyways, today, a federal court in Texas blocked the state from using the redrawn maps. They did so because they said it was done on a racial biased level, or try to racial gerrymander the state. And so by 2-1 ruling, with one of the judges being a Trump appointee, they basically said you're going to have to use the old maps for the midterms. Now, before we get into it, it can be appealed. It will be appealed. It can be stayed. It likely will be stayed, although who knows? But if it does hold, this would be an incredible embarrassment for Trump. Could end up meaning that the Democrats leave this entire process with an actual gain of a seat or two. So I don't know what your thoughts are on here, Tim.
And potentially even more. I did an interview with Dave Wasserman, who is his X handle, his Twitter handle is at redistrict. So, you know, he knows a little bit about this.
He's the authority here.
So people can go watch that if they want to get really nerdy. But like, just the broadest contours, then I'll get to Texas, but you know, kind of just how much this has changed in the last month, because it's truly like a remarkable turn of events. Like the Republicans were in a position, even with California, to kind of set this up to gerrymander themselves about like a 12 seat gain in the whole country, which would have been pretty significant. And then on top of that, this Voting Rights Act, which is the other kind of legal things happening in addition to Texas, if that was overturned, you know, soon during a winter emergency session by SCOTUS, then maybe additional state, you could have been in a situation where I was literally getting messages from people who know this stuff, who are nerds, who know I'm a nerd, who are like, if everything goes right for the Republicans, then they might win. They might successfully gerrymander the country to such
even with California.
Yeah, that the Democrats couldn't do it even in a wave. Like, that was the worst case scenario. Now that was going to be, you know, all of the Republican states going exactly as they want. It was going to be the VRA, right? So it was a worst case scenario. But just like, that was literally on the table like 3 weeks ago. And now, like, we've had these series of actions, including Virginia, where the Democrats got aggressive and are going on offense. Maybe they will go in some other states simultaneously with just these rake steps in the red states for the Republicans. You mentioned Texas. We'll talk about Indiana. The Texas situation, again, who knows? You know, this will the gerrymandered Texas maps will probably be through in 2026. But like, my two thoughts of this are, one, the idea that we could have gone from like Republicans like creating an impenetrable map for themselves to like the Democrats now potentially gaining seats through this, if this Texas court thing stays, is like it's an unbelievable turn of events in a short period of time. Secondly, you know, I think that Texas has a secondary problem if you look at the Latino numbers right now, which is like what was underscoring a lot of the Texas redistricting was these kind of where the maps where Trump had done a lot better down in these border, heavily Latino kind of border communities, border districts. That's looking a lot shakier. So even if, you know, this court ruling is not upheld and the new maps are kept, you know, what looked like a 5-seat gain for Republicans in Texas is like maybe 3 or definitely like 4, right? Like some of these other seats are looking shakier.
Well, I was down in Austin for the Texas Trip Fest last week. And look, it's a bunch of people who don't really like Trump. And they were, you know, but the talk was really about that. Like when you were just shooting the shit about Texas politics, it's like two topics. One was who's going to be the Senate candidate for the Democrats. And there's a lot there. But two was what's going to be the actual outcome of this gerrymandering? And this is prior to this judge's ruling here. And to a person, they were just like, don't just assume that all these seats are going to go to Republicans. Like there's real backlash happening here in Texas, primarily around affordability, but also around what's happening with ICE and things like that. And these Latino voters, they were not, you know, they gravitated towards Trump, but they didn't decamp to Trump and they could come back. So there was a lot of optimism. Again, huge pile of salt on that, because these are people are paid to be optimistic by that. But this case happens. I'm going to read a little bit from the ruling because it does underscore why they shot it down. They said the public perception of this case is that it's about politics. To be sure, politics played a role in drawing the 2025 map, but it was much more than just politics. Substantial evidence shows that Texas racially gerrymandered the 2025 map, according to the ruling. So again, ruling on this, it will be appealed. We likely go to the Supreme Court. The thing, though, is that the deadline for filing is December 6th. So there is a bit of a tight timeline. So we're going to keep our eyes on that.
Speaking of filing deadlines, I have a fucking epic filing deadline rant coming your guys' way later this week. Unfortunately, Kamala Harris is taking priority over that.
Okay. I'm excited to understand what that's about.
I just like to tease. I like to tease people. People like, you know, when I'm really riled up about something and I'm riled up about filing deadline shenanigans, it's going to be the biggest video.
Oh, is this the Chewy Garcia thing?
You know, tens of thousands of views.
Yeah, okay. What will the comments be? Mixed. We'll see. I want to talk about the Indiana story because in many ways, this is way more compelling to me. So I'll set it up for you basically what happened just this afternoon. So a lot of pressure is being put on the state senators to get ahead with redistricting. The House is fully on board, and Mike Braun, the governor, is now being just reamed by Trump to make it happen, and he's fully on board. But the state senators are not. And so they voted today by a fairly wide margin to not go into special session, which is when they were going to do the redistricting. They said, no, let's just do it in January. It was like 29 of them saying, don't want to do it now. It was a huge rebuke. And a number of them came out and just announced publicly, which they had not done to this point, that they were not going to vote for redistricting. The vote was 29 to 18. So Trump's flipping out. Like, he's throwing the books at these guys. And then the craziest thing happens is Mike Braun puts out a statement, the governor. He says, unfortunately, Senator Rod Bray, who runs the state Senate, was forced to partner with Democrats, in all caps because he wants to do his Trump impression, to block an effort by the growing number of American First senators who want to have a vote on passing fair maps. Now I'm left with no choice other than to explore all options at my disposal to compel the state Senate to show up and vote. I talked to a reporter who covers this stuff. The possibility is they dispatch like sheriffs to bring the senators back in to vote, to just get them on the record about where they come. That's what this is heading to.
It is crazy how crazy far that they're going to go. And especially now, I mean, given how successful the Democrats have been in pushing back, it's like even the best case scenario for Republicans is shaky. I mean, for a first midterm, based on what we saw last week, based on kind of where, I mean, anything can happen in a year, but it's like, okay, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, we're going to bring in the sheriffs as a power play to like guarantee that we hold the House. It's another thing to do that to like, you know, give yourself a projection of being down 12 Senate seats or 12 House seats rather versus being down 14, you know? But anyway, look, the Indiana story, and there are two other things that are just worth mentioning. I mean, the Mike Pence of it all behind the scenes. Mike Pence is obviously, you know, seeing this is a tiny little bit of vengeance that he can have. You know, he's got limited power, but he's got a couple buddies in the Indiana state legislature, and his hand is at work here. Secondarily, there is a real impact. Like the last week's elections, you've been making fun of me in the Slack, which is fine, about like the new optimistic Tim talking about how this is the end of Trump. And I don't mean it like literally in the sense that like Trump is going away tomorrow. Like we have three more years of Donald Trump. Who the fuck knows what else he's going to do?
Yeah.
But my point is that like it is possible that when we're gray, Sam, 5-10 years hence, we'll look back and be like, when did the momentum inexorably start to move away from him?
Sure.
And it's possible that it's been the last week or two. And this is just like I connect that to Indiana in the sense it's just like people only have the courage and backbone to stand up to him if they're not scared. Right.
Right.
And like, and everybody's been scared of him, obviously within their own Republican Party, but up to and including like CEOs and rich people and, you know, Bob Iger. And like, people are just not as scared now. And I think that is like a noteworthy shift. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. I listened to you and Bill on the pod yesterday.
Oh yeah.
Like very close to climaxing. Like just
that is ew.
Is it the end? Is that it the is end, ew. Bill?
On our fan page, so there was clamoring for Bill to start reading the ZBiotics ads.
Does Bill need help getting over that hangover from Saturday night?
I think there's a reason the advertisers are targeting me. But yeah, no, me and Bill were a little. Can me and Bill be happy for one Monday? Can you let us be happy for one Monday?
I didn't intervene. I just wanted to make sure that people's look. I live life expecting the worst, and then when I get something that's not the worst, it feels great. But I'm always not going to get upset because I totally anticipate the worst. And I fully expect that the Indiana Senate Republicans are going to say, oh, this is too much. Fine, we'll vote for it, whatever. But, you know, it is, I will say, it is notable that this, I mean, they're throwing everything they can at these guys and they are threatening them. I mean, one of the guys, the Senate leader Bray did have I think it was a swatting incident. Yeah, he was the swatting incident. Marjorie Taylor Greene was the pizza deliveries. But yeah, like this is real shit. Like these are real threats. I'm not trying to make light of them. I think that the threats actually don't work because two things. One is I think it's like the public threats really have a way of actually stiffening people's spines. You don't want to be seen as bending to that shit because it just invites more of that behavior. And two is I think, you know, it's strength in numbers really, right? Like once you see that if you stand up to Trump and it can work once, then other people are going to take that cue. And so that's why I was talking to Joe Perticone about this, about the Epstein stuff. It's like, there is a significance, obviously, to the revelation of the files themselves, but there's also a real significance to the fact that four people did stand up to all the pressure and prevailed because it's just going to invite that type of behavior in the future.
I'm with you on all that. Mm-hmm. I just don't know why you can't be as encouraged by the stiffened spines as I am, but that's okay.
I'm encouraged.
I'm an emotional roller coaster. That's why people like riding with me, Sam. It's like, you know, it's just like you're up.
The
you're
highs
down.
Are so
you
never high. Know the lows are so low.
You never know what you're going to get, you know, when you download the Bulwark take.
Well, you know? I usually do because when you edit Bill, it's going to be something about the, you know, the Federalist Papers followed by, oh my God, we're an autocracy, followed by, let me get into Trump's head for a second. And that's what you're going to get. But it's worth it. Subscribe to the feed.
Yeah.
All right.
Plus Churchill.
Hey, good luck tonight, buddy. Have fun with Kamala. Looking forward to the pod. And for those who are watching, thank you for handling me and Tim go dorky on redistricting for a little bit. Appreciate that and subscribe to the feed.
See you soon.